Welcome to Out There with TJ Ryan. It's strange. It's unusual. It's mysterious. It's out there, out there, out there, out there. And now your host, TJ Ryan.
He's a busy man. He is a busy man. Jim Maroney. He's out of Canada, I believe, over towards Vancouver. And he is my guest this week. I've had him on before. I really like talking to Jim. His experience is a unique experience. How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing really well. Thank you very much. I'm really happy, actually, to be on your show today.
Now, you were on, God, I don't know how long ago it was we had you on the show, but maybe over a year ago. It's funny how time just seems to go so fast, and if you're busy, you don't keep track of it too much.
That's exactly it, too. Yeah, even when I look at what's happening in the whole field of UFOlogy, I'll call it, things have changed quite a bit in the last 10 years, and it doesn't seem that long ago, really, when it was a subject that a lot of people felt quite nervous to talk about, but obviously I think it's garnered a lot more attention, some positive and some negative, I think, so it's interesting how things are unfolding.
Okay, briefly now, if you could tell us, or take your time, that's up to you, Jim, a little bit about your past and what you do now, what kind of work you do.
Well, I'm married, been married to the same lovely lady for 21 years. We have two children. My profession is, or my position is executive director of Health and Safety Association. And I've been in this position for about 10 years or so. And I do a little bit of work on UFOlogy and UFO stuff, but again, my primary function and my primary job is in health and safety. And I also teach at the universities as well, again, similar to health and safety and those types of activities. So,
well, let me ask you, Jim, did you believe in UFOs as a kid, or were you open to those kind of things? You and I are both the same age, both born in 1960. Because I've always believed that stuff from a young age on. Did you believe that?
I always believed that there was something to the UFO phenomenon. I also believed that, there were some frauds out there, and there was obviously fake UFO shots. But I really did believe that there was some grain of truth to some of the sightings that people had reported. And that's really where I'd concluded on it. I hadn't found much more than that. I think I do recall thinking more seriously about it at one time, and I thought, you know what, what are these aliens really like if they are visiting Earth? And I kind of thought that they would be pretty much like us, just more technologically advanced. And that's really as far as I really got with respect to thinking about it. I had no idea where they would come from or anything else like that, because the universe is obviously extremely vast. But, I think like many reasonable people, we thought, like, we're not the only ones in the universe, and there's life somewhere else in the universe. And that's really as much as I got to think about it.
Did you hear of any stories when you were younger about UFOs or anything like that?
Well, curiously, I did have some interest in the unexplained phenomena at some point. So I managed to, and there wasn't a lot shown on TV. There really wasn't a lot of material to go and find. But I would actually spend time at the library looking at other things. And occasionally I would come across a book on UFOs. They weren't very, very common back then, maybe one or two books. And that's really what I did. I read a little bit about it, and that's about where my knowledge came from. They didn't have TV programs on UFOs, and they,
right,
and even radio programs very seldom actually touched on the subject matter.
When I was in third grade, I remember looking out the bedroom window, and on summer nights, I'd stay up a little later, and I'd look out. We'd go to bed, my brother and I, but we always were restless, and I looked out the window one night, and I saw this oval craft. So I had to be, how old are you in third grade? 8, 9 years old?
Yeah.
And I saw it move across the horizon, all these different colors, and it just slowly went across the horizon. And my parents watched. I yelled out to them, "What's that, Mom?" And so they watched it, and they didn't know what it was at the time. And then my mom, the next day, said, "Oh, I think I know what that was," but she never told me. So I think she was either trying to play it down, or maybe they got taken, or maybe we all got taken. We don't even know it, you know, because you don't normally remember that. Yeah. But you had an incident that is probably more clear than most people will ever have. And this happened in 1987. Now, can you run that down again, if you could, please?
Sure. Essentially, back in 1987, I had an encounter experience that fundamentally changed my life, my understanding about this world, and the fundamentally about my understanding about my own life. And it occurred in a way that left absolutely no doubt in my mind that this phenomenon is real, but it also left me with a lot of questions. I did have to go through hypnosis to recall some of my experiences, but other experiences that I had that evening were absolutely crystal clear without, you know, any, I didn't need any hypnosis to actually recall the memories. So I'm going to tell the story. I'm going to mesh a little bit of both of those together.
Okay.
But essentially, I had pulled into a truck stop area, and I tried to get a little bit of sleep in my little Honda Civic, and I pulled myself over to the passenger side. It was about 2:30 in the morning, somewhere in that neighborhood, and I was exhausted. I'd been driving for 13 hours, and this little truck stop is located in a place just south of a little city called Winnipeg, and that's really in the central part of Canada, essentially, just off the main highway that traverses Canada. And when I got there, I did feel a little bit uneasy, and I couldn't explain my uneasiness. I really couldn't, but I felt uneasy to the point that I really thought that I needed to be where people could see me. And so I made sure where I parked my vehicle that I was parking in front of the diner area, probably within, I'd say, maybe 150 feet of the diner area. And there was only one place really for vehicles to actually park in that area. So I did that, and then I tried to get a little bit of sleep. But it was impossible to really try and get sleep into that truck stop. It was a busy highway. It was, you know, in the middle of summer, right during vacation time, so there's a lot of people on the roads, a lot of trucks on the roads as well, even at that time in the morning. So the truckers would actually start pulling in. I guess they thought that it was easier to drive in the evening sometimes because there was less traffic, but a lot of the trucks were pulling in, and this was really making it difficult for me to get any kind of sleep. I'd feel myself starting to doze off, and then all of a sudden that truck would come in and, you know, wake me completely up. And then another truck was coming in, and but this guy was really getting close, and I'm thinking, what is this idiot doing? He was pulling his vehicle right next to mine. And I knew this because I could see the lights, as his headlights were just blasting right into the car. And of course, I was getting irritated now, because I'm not going to open my eyes wide open. You know, not when someone's got that kind of intensity of light shining into your car and you're trying to, you know, you're trying to sleep. So I'm just squinting my eyes. And all of a sudden, the lights start moving over top of the vehicle. Mm. Now, I know this because I have a sunroof. And instantaneously, as this was happening, a paralysis overtook me. And my mind was racing to try and assess the situation. And I realized that obviously there was a craft over top of my vehicle. And the hairs on my arms were actually rising. So I knew that there was an intense electromagnetic field underneath this craft. And the other things that rushed through my mind as this experience was unfolding was, you know, what am I going to do? What kind of a situation am I in? And one of the things I really was concerned about is that I didn't want to do anything that was going to jeopardize my life. I didn't know how this experience was going to unfold. I obviously wasn't prepared for it. And But I realized that the intensity of this paralysis, was such that I reasoned that the reason why I'm being paralyzed was because whoever is doing this to me is quite nervous or quite scared, let me put it this way, about how I'm going to react. In other words, when you have that kind of force exhibited on you, someone else is trying to protect themselves. They're nervous about what they're going to do. So the best thing that I could do is I thought, you know, I'm not going to resist this. There's no point in resisting it anyway. It was impossible. And and then I tried to essentially show them that I wasn't going to hurt them in any way, and that they didn't need to be too worried about me. So I did manage to move my arm just a little bit, with just, it seemed like superhuman effort, my right arm, to unlock the door, the passenger door. And when I did that, essentially, just as I did that, I was drawn forward through the windshield of the car.
You were drawn forward through the windshield?
Yeah, yeah. Like through the windshield. And through the dashboard, it was as
how
if.
How can that happen?
I have no explanation for it. It shouldn't happen. Everything in physics and everything in my life told me, even up to that point, you don't move through solid objects. Solid objects are solid objects. But I moved through it like the object was basically water. You know, I could feel a little bit of it as I was passing through the solid material, but it was just like passing through water, you know, and that's the best way I could describe it. But stationary water. It was really odd. But the next thing I remember is standing in an oval room beside my vehicle. My vehicle and myself were actually now in a craft of some sort. And this oval room was extremely bright, like it was very bright, just like you would be in, let's say, a hospital, like a really bright, well-lit hospital. Mm-hmm. And in front of me were, three or four, distinctly non-human beings. They all had blue pupils. They didn't have the eyes that a lot of other people report, these black eyes that I've seen, these almond-shaped eyes. I mean, they had almond shape to it, but they were actually blue pupils, and none of them had any color variation in their eyes. They all had the same type of intense blue eyes, and their eyes themselves were quite large. They were, I'd say, they were maybe 5-6 times larger than a human eye. And
wow.
And they, of course, part of this process of being drawn on board the ship, it was quite painful, actually. I don't understand, obviously, even to this day, and many, 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 many years later, why it was so painful, but I'm assuming that maybe we now were maybe in transit. I don't know if it was part of the process of being drawn through the solid material, but what had happened is that it was quite painful. I mean, I actually thought for a brief moment as I was getting pulled into the craft that I was going to die.
And were they, do you think they were doing a kind of an experiment on you, or...?
Not at that exact moment. I mean, this is just drawing me onto the craft. I've come to believe that really what it was not only were they pulling me onto the craft, but they were moving me at a really great speed from that particular location. And I think that may have had something to do with the discomfort that I felt. But as I was trying to get my bearings about me, I stumbled to my car, and I put my hand on my car, and I was looking around trying to take this all in. And my response was quite angry, actually.
Yes.
I told them, I said, you guys have no right to do this. What the hell are you doing? I was swearing a blue streak.
Mm-hmm.
And then one step forward and spoke in complete, really clear English.
Did they speak, or did they just think it?
They actually spoke.
Okay.
They actually had the ability to actually speak English verbally. You know, it was an auditory communication, no question about it. But also part of when I was up there, I wasn't in 100% control of my faculties. They did have this ability to extend their consciousness into mind to kind of, almost like a hypnotic suggestion. If you've ever seen a person on stage that would be given suggestions, after they go through hypnosis. It was very similar to that. So it appeared that these beings were really controlling me to some extent, but they were also wishing to have some kind of communication with me.
Go ahead.
In the rest of that process on the ship, I think that I'm guessing, or I'm assuming, really, the amount of time I spent on the ship was anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour. But they did go through a number of experiments with me, and none of them were actually particularly comfortable. So they were pretty painful. But in the end, I do recall like going into a room, seeing other people actually that were lying in these beds. This is back in 1987. I mean, this is something that you know, our society really wasn't talking very much about. But there was other people on these beds, other human beings. And they were dressed in different clothing, like different apparel. Some had pajamas. One had a flannel shirt. You know, and there were different ages as well. And I remember I didn't want to see that. I remember I thought to myself, you know, I don't want to see this. And because the ramifications of seeing that were so awe-inspiring, so awesome, despite everything else I'd gone through on that, just seeing other people in that kind of condition was pretty upsetting to me.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in the end, these beings really reached out to me and extended a very compassionate and loving message to me. In a way, they were kind of testing me to figure out kind of, you know, who Jim Maroney actually is. You know, what kind of a person is this guy really? And it turns out now that I've understood that, you know, I've had, you know, relationship with these beings for years prior to that particular experience. This wasn't the first time I've ever had an encounter with them, but it was the first time that I remembered anything about them. And I also learned really that what we're dealing with here, and this is what I've come to understand, is that what we're dealing with is an intervention of sorts, and that's why things are happening the way they are right now. And if we try to look at it from that intervention standpoint, I think a lot more, you know, a lot of things become clear about what's actually happening and why it's happening. One of the challenges, even for me right now, when I look at the whole UFO field, it becomes somewhat despairingly obfuscated by so much poor information and bad information and outright lies. Even people who promoted early on that they were wanting to search for the truth, you know, have found themselves going down roads that I just can't go down that road with them. So there's a lot of things about the UFO field that I'm not happy with respect to, you know, how far we've gone down certain roads with certain belief systems that really are not substantiated by any of the scientific evidence that we have available to us today. And I think another challenge is that the science that really should have been leading the charge in our understanding on this phenomenon has almost completely left us, it seems. And it has left a void that others have jumped in to fill, but not really with the kind of scientific integrity that should have been applied to our understanding and to improving our understanding about the phenomenon. So here we stand, you know, many years later, but also getting closer to a point in time when we're going to understand a lot more about these beings, that they're going to maybe unveil to us what their overall plan actually was or is. But in the meantime, you know, they're very cautious about who they contact, when they contact individuals, how much information they translate to individuals, because it seems to me that they're also really quite concerned that they don't overly upset people to the point that they're, you know, people stop doing the things they need to be doing in this life at this point in time in our history. But certainly changes are going to be coming, and they're going to be coming within our lifetime.
Hmm.
And I'm hoping that you know, we're going to be better prepared for dealing with it. But as we can see right now, that there's a significant number of people out there that are very fearful about any kind of contact with any aliens. You can't blame them, actually, when you see all the science fiction shows that are just shows. You know, they are shows, they're there for entertainment, but they're not based in scientific fact, right?
So. Not just that, Jim, you know, I've been hearing, you know, it's funny, you tell me the story, and I really don't know you, so I don't, you know, I trust you because you seem like a pretty good guy, but but had I not heard this story before, in my own personal experience, you know, maybe I could buy some of the other stories that I'm hearing out there. There was a couple I interviewed when I first started doing the show, and the woman was taken aboard a craft, and they treated her exceptionally well. And then they gently placed her back in her bed. And so she's the second person. And then I had an experience in 92, which to me was not unpleasant at all. And I just had a visitation, and it came. And like you, I was frozen. And when I relaxed and I thought to myself, I'm not going to hurt you, it loosened the reins, and it was a short experience. For all I know, maybe I was taken and I don't remember that. So there seems to be, and the reason I wanted to do this show, there seems to be a split. Some people are saying that these beings are not necessarily doing this for our best intentions, and they treat us like cattle, and they're taking us, and you have a totally different experience. And so I also wonder, is there propaganda?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think maybe what we're dealing with is the human side of who we are, you know, and that is, you know, there is a tendency to fear the unknown. And, you know, when you look at history, you know, our history is fairly violent history. You know, we tend to dominate those people that we can dominate. That's what history has shown to us. You know, we are also very compassionate at times, but our, you know, the human history is full of war and conflict. So I think it's a natural extrapolation of these experiences that we and how we react to each other, and this is how we assume that beings from more advanced beings would come from another world, and how they might treat us. You know, it's wrong. I think the assumptions are wrong, but I can understand why people would feel that way.
So you don't feel in any way, because this is the way I feel, Jim, and I know maybe you don't reflect this, or maybe you don't want to reflect this, but I really believe our government knows about this, and I really believe our government has tried to create either a campaign to cover it up or to create a negative light around these beings.
Well, you know, I admit there's some merit to that, to those ideas. I don't obviously know. I really don't know. But it seems to me quite obvious that the military is at least aware that the phenomenon exists. And the military has very strict protocols with respect to dealing with advanced technologies. So, you know, I would say they would have to view, the military would have to view them as a potential threat because they haven't initiated certain types of things. But, a potential is a potential. It doesn't mean it's real. And but that's the way the military has to treat it, because that's what all militaries in the world do. And maybe that kind of treatment on the phenomenon, that kind of viewpoint of the phenomenon, has led to maybe just an intention of avoiding it altogether, or disseminating information that's maybe not accurate. You know, I'd have to tell you, you know, I don't think the government really has to put a lot of effort into disinformation, because it seems that, you know, they just have to sit back and not say anything. And I think there'll be people out there that'll create the information itself and create this cloud of uncertainty about what's actually happening in the phenomenon.
What do you think about these people that have experiences that are totally different than yours? I'm referring to the Grays, too.
Yeah.
That feel like it's a very dark and negative experience. What do you think about, I'm sure you've heard some of those stories.
Yeah. Well, some of them I don't believe. Others, there may be some truth to what they're saying from their personal experience, but I think in some part of it, it may also be that the information and how they extracted that information may not have been done under the best circumstances. In other words, if you're going through hypnotic recall, you have to make sure that you find somebody that is a professional, not necessarily a UFO abduction specialist, but somebody who has your best interest at heart. So I think when you look at the scientific integrity of some of the work that's been done, really it's fairly limited. When we look at, let's say, Johnny Mack, Dr. Johnny Mack, and the work that he did, you know, he came to the conclusion, and he used all the scientific rigor that was available to him, and he came to the conclusion that these beings were not here to hurt us, and that the vast majority of people that he considered working with, that their experiences were actually positive. So, you know, and that flies in the face of some of the other information that seems to be propagating the media at this point in time. So I think we have to be careful about where that information comes from and how that information's been extracted.
You know, I've been following, you know, Whitley Strieber's book was the first one I read, basically, and Communion. And basically he comes to a connection with these beings like you have.
Yeah.
At first, yeah, he's terrified of them, and then he realizes there's something more, and he almost looks forward to seeing them.
Yeah.
And then Bud Hopkins, for years, did research, and most of what I read of Bud, I didn't read more recent stuff, and he passed away recently, but
yeah,
his research pointed in the same direction you're talking about, where most people came to realize that either they were being impregnated or something was, like a race was being combined, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't being done to hurt them in any way.
Yeah. Well, here's the reality of it. You know, we are fighting for our survival. We don't even realize it. You know, we're in a war of our survival. You know, part of this contact process, part of this whole intervention, is really the underpinning of this is our future survival. So, you know, I know that we have our social rights and wrongs. You know, what you shouldn't take people without their permission. You shouldn't force yourself on people or do things to people without their permission and all those things. These, I believe, are narrow views when in the greater context of what's actually happening. You know, my experience with these beings has told me that, you know, has shown me that. You know, there's a lot of things I still don't understand about the phenomenon. I desperately would want to understand it. You know, I would definitely want a relationship, a closer relationship with these beings. But it's just not, you know, wishing it just does not going to make it happen. I've come to understand that it may happen in the future, but, you know, I think to a great extent it'll be relatively limited because of how difficult this relationship actually is going to be. You know, this is not for those people with the faint of heart. You know, it takes a lot of courage. This is where I want to put it out there. I mean, I want to say, look, it takes people with courage to understand this. You know, if we are going to move our society in a direction that's going to be positive, then we need to have courageous people putting themselves at risk, pushing the boundaries of our knowledge, exploring this incredible opportunity, and trying to develop a relationship with these beings that are going to be more positive than maybe some of the negative experiences that some people have had. So that's really my hope.
You feel that they're trying to save us from what? Nuclear devastation or destroying the world or?
Yeah, their perception is, and this is their perception is that we are spiritually retarded. Like, we just are. Our growth, our spiritual growth, has somehow been spiritually retarded. And their goal, they don't see us as having technology being a good thing for humanity. They just don't see it that way. They don't see that they are technologically more advanced, but they are spiritually more advanced as well. And this... And they have a balance with their technology and their spirituality. We don't. And this is what they perceive. They are trying, I believe, underlying all of this, is they are trying to initiate some form of rapid spiritual development in a segment of the human population. But I also see that from their point of view, and I can believe this myself now, that humanity has to go down a very dark road before it turns the corner and decides for itself that it wants to follow a different path.
Now, when you say, Jim, you say a spiritual development, what are you, you know, spiritual can mean a lot of different things to different people, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you trying to say in a roundabout way?
I think a greater connection with the Creator and a greater connection with ourselves individually and with each other, and a greater compassion, you know, mm-hmm. a way to resolve our conflicts without going to war.
Mm-hmm.
That seems pretty lofty at this point in time when you look around the world. Obviously it is, but that is their perception of it. I believe that they feel that there's a major, possibly a nuclear war coming, or the threat of it, and that's what they're really concerned about. They don't want to see us be lost. You know, they don't want to see us destroy ourselves.
Do you feel?
I think they not only do they want us in the universe, there's a need for us out there in the universe in some way, shape, or form.
Do you feel that these beings feel like we're destroying the planet as well?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You know, they feel that not having that spiritual connection, you know, if you're spiritually more aware, you're spiritually aware of also the environment that you exist within, you know, and what you need to do to nurture that environment so that you don't destroy it. That's another part of it. You know, not only do we fight each other, but we also don't take care of the environment in the way that we should. And that type of spiritual awareness would go a long way to remedying most, if not all, of our current ills and problems. But that's their perception of it. You know, so I can see that, you know, where they see this imbalance, where technology has surpassed our ability to manage it in many ways. And they're deeply concerned about our future.
Now, the name of your book was it Extraterrestrial Answer Book? That's what it was?
Yes, that's right. That's correct. You bet.
And what kind of answers? I know you probably don't want to give away the whole book, but I mean, what kind of answers are they supplying?
Well, really what they're trying to do, and I guess what I'm trying to provide is the point that individually, we are going to be asked, you know, in some way, shape, or form, to respond to this phenomenon in a way that's going to be conducive and constructive to the future of humanity. I believe that we are in a wonderful position. We really are, and we have to recognize that, and we have to start demanding, even for ourselves individually, that we are going to be maybe better for with each other, but that we're going to spend the time trying to understand, for example, this phenomenon and the importance of it and what we can learn from it and how we can actually maybe even encourage it. Mm-hmm. And for those people who are trying to prepare themselves for the day that we may have contact or that they may have contact, because it seems that rather than having group mass contacts, these beings are seeking out individuals. And just because you don't have contact today doesn't mean you won't have it tomorrow. It's really a timing issue. And just because someone has it before you doesn't mean that person's more important than you. It's just a timing issue for your life and what's happening in your life and what's happening in the world.
And I also would say, Jim, how do we know we already haven't had contact?
Well, yeah, I'd have to tell you, you know, the way the phenomenon showed me, I mean, how I was unaware of previous contacts is so astounding to me that I've come to the conclusion that many of us probably have had contact. I think it's more likely that we have already been contacted. We just don't remember it. And that's probably a good thing, actually, in some ways.
So are there little signs, maybe, that we can... I talked to a gal in Lower Michigan who said there are little signs you can tell maybe if you've been taken.
Yeah. I, for me, one of the breadcrumbs that they left along the way in my memory was the idea of paralysis, you know, nighttime paralysis.
Mm-hmm.
If you experience that type of paralysis, I'd say that's a good, really, actually an exceptionally strong indicator that you've had some kind of experience with them. If you've had missing time, that's also Bud Hopkins had come up with that as well, and I think that's a valid point, so... Those types of things, and I mean, it has to be significant missing time. I think it has to be an awareness of how that time passed. You know,
didn't Whitley Strieber also say he had dreams of these big owls with big eyes? I mean, can have a dream of some kind of animal that maybe could represent that.
Well, because we're dealing with a different type of consciousness here. I mean, we're not dealing with a human consciousness. We are dealing with a consciousness that works on multiple levels, and has multiple levels of planning. The ability for them to enter our dreams is certainly there. The ability for our own consciousness to try and wrestle with the experience itself of beings that don't come from this world is also there. So, yeah, I think that dreams are maybe an indication, but I would put that on a less likelihood. Like, I mean, I'm more cautious when it comes to our dreams and the interpretation of dreams.
What about if you see a UFO? You know, not everybody, I believe not everybody sees them, and not everybody's allowed to see them. Some people are switched on to see them. There could be 20 people looking up in the sky, 5 people might see this craft, and the rest cannot. And this is what I learned from Marilyn Rubin and others that they've studied this. So sometimes maybe if you have an interest in this, or if you see these things, is that another hint that maybe you've been getting some visitations?
I would say so, absolutely. You know, they're aware of us, and they're aware of you. So if you, they may even have a plan, a very, very cautious, very detailed plan about how they're going to expose themselves or announce themselves to you. And that's one of the ways they may do it. They say, you know what, maybe we'll show you, you know, what we look like or that we actually exist. And I have to say that, you know, we should stop avoiding looking at these as just like happenstance or just by chance. I think that when we're dealing with these beings, it's much better for us to kind of look into it and say, like, is there a plan behind this? And for that reason, I'd have to say yes. You know, I think in many cases, when we see these encounters and people report them, you have to ask yourself, you know, was that specifically meant for me? Mm-hmm. Was that experience meant for me? And in some cases, I'd have to say, yeah, it actually was.
Well, I got to believe that, you know, maybe I'm just loony. Maybe I'm just loony, Jim. Maybe we're both loony. But, and I don't think that of you. But
recently, oh, that's okay. Maybe I am.
Recently, I saw, as well as maybe it was about 6 years ago, I saw a craft in the sky that was going almost right along with the sun. It was hard to see, but it was a metallic gray, shiny metallic craft. And I know they don't make planes that way anymore because it would be blinding. A friend of mine told me that. So I saw something, and you could only see it when it turned a certain way. And it was flying low, and it was not going that fast. And I thought, well, maybe that's, you know, maybe I'm seeing something. Then, last year, Jim, now I don't know what you know about this, but I'm going to ask you. My neighbor, I don't know it was my neighbor. I knew it was out in my area. We've almost never had reports of crop circles up here in Upper Michigan. There's a report, and I knew it was somewhere out towards where I live. Well, it turns out to be my neighbor, 3/4 of a mile away from my house. Do you feel that these crop circles are being done by beings from another place?
No word. No, not really.
You don't think so?
Yeah, I'm really skeptical in that sense. I believe that the more, like the plain crop circles, like when a craft lands and leaves an impression in the field, I believe those things are there. Like, I believe that there's some merit to those types of reports. But when I look at the whole crop circle area, and this is going to get into a whole different viewpoint, but I mean, I'm just answering you, and it kind of seems like I'm flippant on this, but, you know, when you see the crop circles really being concentrated, for example, in England, and that's really where they were. They said, some people said, well, they happen all over the world, but really when you look at the number of crop circles and where they were occurring, mm-hmm. It was pretty clear that they were localized to some areas. And to me, you know, this is a worldwide phenomenon, and if that's the way they wanted to communicate or announce themselves to us, they would have just done this, you know, as a worldwide issue, and they really hadn't done that. And then, of course, they're quite easy to actually fake as well, and that makes it more difficult for us to come to a conclusion that they're actually real. You know, I've actually had an opportunity to go out and look at some crop circles that had been reported in let's say, the Alberta area. And the I really came to the conclusion, and myself and some other people as well, that they were actually faked. So I'm more skeptical on that, you know. But again, I think it's an area that's still worthtwhile for us to study it. But I'm just skeptical. About it.
I guess my take on it is, it certainly could be another way. Like you say, they're trying to communicate with us, and to me, this would make sense. That this is another way they're trying to gently wake us up, and let us know that they are trying to have contact with us. But they're, you know, I also believe that if you come from a race that's more advanced, you have a great respect. If you are more aware, if you have more awareness, it like spiritually evolved. And you're not going to step in and take over. So you're going to do little things to give little hints to the people that are asleep on the planet. And some of it could be a crop circle. This farmer had some people look at it, and his, you know, if you're going to do it with a board, which is what most people will do, the boarding, that's going to push him way down. But this was just kind of like slightly bent over, two big circles in his yard. Now, granted, it could have been faked. I'm not saying that it couldn't be. But part of me also feels like there could be somebody communicating with us.
It could be. And you know, there are, I would say, absolutely valid reports of where crafts have landed in fields and left those types of particular circles. You know, so I'd say the more mundane circles are the ones that are more interesting, you know, that have more validity to them. So it sounds like that has more of a chance of being valid. Absolutely.
So do you still, you're still on this quest. I see you got a website. You still got your website. Yeah. You're still very involved with this all the time.
I am. Maybe not to the extent that I was earlier. You know, I really felt that I needed to write the book to try and share what I understand how the phenomenon is. You know, I see there's lots of challenges in this area. I believe, maybe the next part of our road to discovery. It has to be a way of describing from a biological standpoint those people who've actually had contact. You know, we have to be able to find a physical means of determining who's had contact and who hasn't. And if you get to that point, it would clear up a lot of problems, probably create a whole lot of other problems too, but it would clear up some of the main problems that we have and maybe answer some of the questions that you posed earlier with respect to who's actually had contact. And I'm hoping that that's what we're going to be able to do, because part of what these experiences are with these beings, there's some kind of physical component. You know, these, they're not just testing. They're actually trying to change something physically in humanity. That's really my conclusion to this as well. And I think that we just need to understand what they're trying to change if we have the instrumentation to actually measure those changes. Mm-hmm. Maybe we will in the future. You know, I'm not thinking we're going to be growing a second head or anything like that. But, you know,
I'm going to have an alien baby.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, something extraordinary is happening. And they're using all of their technology, which is thousands of years more advanced than ours, tens of thousands of years more advanced than ours. And they're using every bit of it to try and make these changes. And I think it's stressing their technology to its utter limits. So do we have any chance of understanding it? I don't know. I really don't know. But I think we should try. And you know, that's what I would really... in fact, the next part of my life, I would like to dedicate to trying to understand that so I could help people cope with the experiences that they have and encourage... And if we do that, maybe we can encourage a better, more open relationship with these beings.
You know, this is what I see, and this is why I do the show, my show, is that, hang on one second.
Sure.
Somebody, I'm at work, so people want to come in.
Yes.
But let me ask you this, or tell you this, what I've observed. One, your story is very similar to a woman I interviewed in my own experience in 1992 when I had that visitation. But I will say this. Now, earlier you stated that you couldn't maybe bring him to you. But I had read, I don't know if it was in Whitley's book or somewhere, that actually by thinking about it, as you go to sleep, you could draw them to come visit you. And that's what I felt I experienced in 1992, is that I had thought about them as I was going to sleep, and I thought, I'd really like to see one. I'd like to have an interaction. And that's what woke me up in the middle of the night, and there was one there, and it was there for a short period of time. Now, granted, I blacked out, so who knows? Maybe it took me somewhere. But it was exactly what you're saying. I did not sense that this wanted to hurt me. It put a paralysis on me. And then once a thought hit my mind that if you have no intention of hurting it, and I know where the thought came from, right?
Right.
That it's going to let go of you and you'll be able to move a little bit. And that's exactly what happened. I thought, well, no, I don't want to hurt him. I just want to see him. I'm curious. And so once I released that, then I could start moving my arms and my head and my neck a little bit because I was sitting up. And when this happened to me in bed, I just sat right up and it woke me up. And I looked and saw it in the room. And it scared me. I'll tell you, it scared me at first. But this woman I interviewed with her husband, her story is very similar to yours. And I didn't know these people. And it was the first I heard of somebody having this kind of experience. And maybe it prepared me for what I heard from you. Because you've had a very, very pleasant experience. And so did she. I mean, once you look back at it and you're able to understand it. But I also see... When you're saying that we need to wake up, I see my view of the world is that there is this great spiritual awakening going on. You can call it whatever you want, but I see it's kind of a native. The natives have a good understanding of what this is. They're, some of the people that you want to call New Age have an understanding. And I fall somewhere in between there. And to me, we're all kind of going through, and even the people that believe in what's going on in 2012, that there's a great change. I don't see the world coming to an end, but I think there's a great spiritual change coming forward, and a lot of people are getting that. And perhaps your buddies, Jim, the big Grays, are a part of this as well. Is that
I couldn't agree with you more. I believe 100%. In fact, I know it. I don't just believe it. I know that they're a part of this. I know that we're going to struggle with it. We're going to struggle with the whole experience with these beings, as we are right now. And that's why we're seeing these like two camps that are being, you know, one's the fearful camp and the other camp is saying, well, I think they're benevolent. I'm in between in a sense that I'm saying, well, there are reasons why we fear them. We have to acknowledge that. But we also have to call people to be courageous about it and try and develop this relationship with these beings, because they want a relationship with us.
Could there be other beings visiting us that don't have our best interest in mind, Jim?
Yeah, that's always a possibility. I have thought about it.
Some of them be posing as the grays or the ones we think that are positive? And then this is my explanation for why, I don't know if it's true, but I mean, I've heard about this, but could they be posing as them and creating a negative impact?
Oh, gosh, you know.
I'm really getting out there now, huh?
Yeah. I'll go back to my experience with these beings, and my experience was that it was so overwhelming. I mean, these beings were so different than us that if you're going to come to, maybe it's a universal law that you can't really get off your planet if you don't find a way to have a spiritual balance with your technology.
Okay.
And maybe that's, you know, kind of like the natural selection of things. But to that extent, you know, I think that there are different beings that are visiting us. I mean, if one set of beings comes here, there has to be others. And when you look at some of the reports that I think are more valid, you know, and have a lot of validity to them, and of particular encounters, I mean, it's obvious to me that there are beings that are of different shapes and different sizes, which would suggest different species that are visiting us. So, but I can only say that I believe that at least one species, maybe two, but at least one species has taken a leadership role in the point of contact with beings, with us. And, you know, when you look at the kind of biological challenges that you have to enter into, I mean, we look at Star Trek films and people are interacting with each other on a planet, and it's just like they can breathe the same air, they can deal with the same gravity, the same biology. You know, that's not in truth, you know, what you can do. I mean, so these beings are extremely adaptive. And I think that that's maybe why the reason they became the leader role in actually having contact with individuals. But there's probably other beings out there that have other roles that are playing that are maybe not as in direct contact with us. That's really my conclusion to it.
Do you think there's like a galactic federation or a council or?
Maybe there is. Maybe there's a you know, I think when you look at the world and Earth and you see that these beings are trying to do something, that involves tremendous coordination, tremendous planning, multiple planning on multiple levels, then I'd have to say that you have to coordinate and communicate with other species to say, this is what we're doing, this is why we're doing it, and this is the role we would like you to play. You know, now how they resolve their differences and how they do trade and everything else, I don't know. But I'd have to believe maybe there is some coordinated effort, but how they're structured, it's maybe a structure that we're not familiar with. You know, I'm not sure our governmental structures would work in that kind of environment. And maybe they won't work in 20 years, you know. So, but how they manage themselves socially and how they work socially with each other, it's maybe quite different than what we're familiar with.
Well, I guess I see that we are corrupt in a lot of ways, and we are. You know, there is light and there's darkness. And darkness is merely a choice. I don't see it as being evil. And I think that's been controlling things here, in my opinion, for a long time. And so we have an opportunity now to wake up from this slumber, if we want. It's always a choice. And we can maybe make things and live in a more harmonious universe. That's kind of where I lean on all this. And you really tie into all of it with your story, Jim. And that's why I like having you on my show. What is your website?
My website is AUFOSG.com.
Okay. And the name of your book, if somebody wants to get that?
It is The Extraterrestrial Answer Book.
And do you have any parting shots you want to leave with my listeners?
Well, maybe just a general feeling of empathy and compassion for any of your listeners who haven't had an experience but are trying to muddle through all the information that they're presented with on a daily basis about the subject matter to figure out, you know, what's really going on. All I could say is, you know, stay true to your own heart and your own belief systems, but challenge your belief systems when you need to have them challenged. But understand that the universe is really a wonderful place. Mm-hmm. And the Creator not only created us, but it created other beings out there. And I think that it's a relationship that we not only have to explore and improve upon, but also a relationship that we have to improve with each other. And that's fundamental to the experience.
Would you say it's about love, learning to love?
It really is. It's learning to love not only ourselves, but others. And that's really where the big challenge is for us. I think we're going to get there. You know, this is the thing. I really have a sense that maybe after a very dark period, we're going to get there. And that's not only my hope, but that's my belief.
You know what? I will see you on the ship when we're both on the table.
I would look forward to that. That's for sure.
And this time I'm going to wave to you and say, "Hey, Jim, how's it going?"
I would love that. Absolutely.
It's been a pleasure talking to you. I really love your message and the way you present it. And your story is an incredible story. You know, like Travis Walton and all these other ones that stand out in your mind, your story needs to be told on a bigger level as well. So thank you very much, Jim, for being my guest.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and have a wonderful day.
Music on Out There, created by Kevin MacLeod.